agriculture and agricultural development, and the
$900 million. And the people of Castries South has a voice in this government because I represent them in this house. That's the process they get to government when the parliamentary rep stands in the house to represent them. And that's what I want to remind everybody, that each one of us, and yes, I can hear the Minister for Social Transformation, all those who want to be represented by me, I will represent them very diligently. Because I do represent the former person who contested the election. I represent her well. So I bring all the persons who want me to represent them. I will represent them very faithfully in this house next time around. Madam Speaker, as I speak, I understand that there is a constituent of mine who is going through some health crisis, and I want to assure him that my prayers are with him and his family, because as we live in community, we ought to remember those who face adversity. Madam Speaker, I want to begin by saying that I was a little disturbed by the Prime Minister's opening statement. I want to read the Prime Minister's opening statement because I thought that was a bit funny how he started his presentation. And I quote him on page 2 of his budget address, and it says, "Madam Speaker, I sincerely wish that things were as they were of April 19th, 2007, and that the beloved and most distinguished, the Right Honorable Sir John, stood here where I stand now. I say so because I am fully conscious that with this, his passing, that thrill of hope that his return had brought to so many may also have passed away." I thought it was a bit... No, I don't think it's condescending. I think he owes it to the late Prime Minister, because we must agree that he did do his share in this country. But it was a missed opportunity for the Prime Minister, because each one of us who stand in this house should look forward one day, hopefully, to sit where the Prime Minister is sitting, because we call ourselves leaders in this country. The Prime Minister must accept that he is the leader, and he should not wish his generation, it is time that his generation takes the leadership of this country. Because when my generation is ready for this leadership, we'll take it with both hands. The Prime Minister must not wish for things gone. He must realize that change is an inevitable part of life, and that tomorrow, some other young person will take his seat. And I always be struck by that, because I don't think it was so inspiring to the youth for him to make a statement like that, because the young people look to us, the generation ahead of them, who will see that we want to inspire them to look forward to be leaders in their own spheres. So, Mr. Prime Minister, I thought you erred there. You should have at least recognized that you are the Prime Minister and should buckle down.
Honourable Member, please remember to refer to speak directly to the Chair, as we refer to Honourable Members in the third person, not directly.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister, or the Member, the Prime Minister, the Minister of Finance, failed to really capture the essence of the moment that we face in this country. The three critical issues. One, the high prices of oil in the world, the current food crisis that we face in this country, and food security measures that we need to implement in this country. The budget is a glaring omission of the Prime Minister. In fact, the Prime Minister didn't realize, the Minister of Finance, that there are issues that are more important than all these massive structures that this budget shows, and we are not taking into consideration some of the issues that affect the daily lives of the people of this country. Madam Speaker, you can build, I heard my esteemed friend from Denry North speak about it. We can build and build and build, but to what extent? We need to take care of those issues that affect our people. And if we don't take care of the issues that affect our people at the times when it affects them, then we have not been in a position to lead this country. That's what each member here is called upon to do, to be a leader in this country. When you come into this house, you say you are leading groups of people, and that's what it's called about, to know what are the issues that affect the people in the immediate. Yes, we must plan for the future, but the immediate must not be passed. Madam Speaker, I want to know what is the government's response to these three issues. The Prime Minister, or the Minister of Finance, I should say, must tell the country how we are going to deal with these issues. Not leave it to the Minister of Commerce, who is a member of the Senate, to tell members of this country how we're going to address the issues that face us. The Minister of Commerce is not answerable to the people of this country. Each of these 16 men and one lady in this house, they are the ones who have to face the people of this country to tell them what are the issues that are affecting you. I have to face the people of Castro South. I don't expect anybody else to answer the questions on my behalf. I must tell them how we are going to answer this question. So I think it was remiss, Prime Minister, for him not to address the issues that affect our people directly in the face, instead of all these tunnels that we are projecting. This is a small country, very small country. There is need for some structural development, but not some of the grandiose plans that we have, when we have problems that we need to face address in this country. The Minister of Finance, I think, should have told us the monies that were allocated last year, how these monies were spent, and to bring to this house new sums allocated. Now you're telling us that some of these things were not implemented. It was a vision from last year. Now you're going to implement. So what did they do in this country for the last 365 1/4 days? It is not now we have to implement. Every year this budget has to be implemented. I think it's an insult to MPs not to tell us how the monies were spent in the last fiscal year. And these are not criticisms just because I want to criticize. It's because these are the things that people have asked us to represent them on. The issues, because every year the cycle goes that we have to talk about the finances of this country. And as my esteemed member from the NNF said, we have to account to our people how the monies are spent. Madam Speaker, there's a very low level of implementation of projects from the last budget. Very low implementation of projects. It is not, a budget is no time for us to come here and apportion blame 10 years, 20 years. Each house that sits here on an annual basis to discuss the budget must talk about the issues as they stand in this country today. I am tired of the budget debate being put as a place of apportioning blame to past administration. I refuse to do that, Madam Speaker, because I recognize the work of those who have gone before me, and I stand on the shoulders of those who have gone before me. I will make mistakes. I will criticize those who have made mistakes. But the apportioning of blame instead of addressing the issues in the budget, this must stop. We have to stop. Our young people are looking to us for guidance. When are we going to stop and address the issues as they are? If you are addressing issues, you need to bring the facts in this house. I think what our young people are asking is, how serious are you guys every year you come in this house? And Madam Speaker, I want us to change things around. I've been hearing this for a number of years, that we're going to change things around, we are going to address the issues as they come, but we keep apportioning blame. Apportioning blame. Right now, the shoe is on the other foot, you know. This government is in the defensive. But there's no need to be on the defensive if you can show the people of this country how you spend their money. That's what you have to do. And my responsibility in opposition is to question how you've allocated the monies that you say you're going to spend in this fiscal year. Madam Speaker, the government believes that by presenting all the big, huge plans of the development of Castries, there's nothing to say that Castries does not need a facelift. I will not stand here and say it doesn't. But for all these plans that we keep presenting to the people of St. Lucia, we are not going to make them forget about the sorrows they have facing the present day issues. You can build all the tunnels you want. You can build all the sky rises you want in this country. If the people cannot put food on the table, we are going to be a citizenry that will die of us. To whom are we going to leave these huge projects? To whom? Let us address issues. Don't try to use a marketing ploy of making St. Lucians feel good by showing them all these wonderful projects. And then you know for a fact, we already have, we're in recession. Where are you going to get the money to develop all these projects? Any investor could come to St. Lucia and tell us they're going to build a hotel. But telling us you're going to build a hotel does not mean that you actually carried out all the feasibility plans and all the monies are in place. The government must be truthful to the people. You cannot build 7 hotels in this year. You will not get the Badlands Tunnel going. I heard that last year. I don't want to hear it again. I think it's time we speak to the people about issues we can do. Not what we want to do only. Yes, we must tell them what our vision is. Now, vision is a very easy word to use, you know. People think because they use the word vision that it's always going to be, people say, oh, you have a good phrase. Yes, people are always using the word vision, but they don't understand what vision means. You have to be practical. This country is in recession. How are we attacking the problems that face us today? I'm almost looking at somebody said before that there is negative growth in this country. But I would be magnanimous to the Minister of Finance and say the 0.5 probably is an estimate at this moment. I do not claim to be an economist. I do not. Madam Speaker, I think we have to be honest in this House. I stand here, I sit here and I heard we keep going back to this concept of universal secondary education. What is wrong in a government telling the people of the country that they are going to make it possible in its manifesto of 1997 that we are going to achieve universal secondary education in the year 2005? Because preparing your people, educating your people, as the Minister of Finance said, those who are prepared and educationally, they will make a most meaningful contribution to the country. What is wrong about, what is wrong about reaching universal secondary education, providing education for all the children of your country? This is a way of masking its face because it's embarrassed, this government is embarrassed because for 30 years administration sat there and did nothing about ensuring that we reach universal secondary education. There's nothing wrong in reaching universal secondary education. What we have to do, and I was very happy when the former Prime Minister said he's going to put a task force in place because that's the right thing. Yes, he was a man who saw what should be done. But what has this government done with this task force? For a whole year, I've stayed in this country. I have not heard a word about the recommendations or anything that has come out of this task force. Monies were allocated under the consolidated funds for this task force. Where is the work of this task force? What is the ministry school supervision unit saying about what they have seen about the deficiencies of having achieved universal secondary education? For the Minister of Finance to come back in this house with a copy and paste and to say that USE was hastily achieved. I think we are telling our young people that these things are not important to them. In fact, we've heard members from the other side say education is not important. But there seems to be a dissonance. There seems to be some dissonance between what members on this other side, some of them say on platforms, and what they come and say in this house. We have to be consistent with our deliveries. Universal secondary education, I said last year, is not an event. It's a process. Education is a process. We are always doing, all governments will have to face the issue of how do we make our education system better. All governments will have to. If the Labour Party administration achieves universal secondary education, what this government has to do is to build on that. Because the Labour Party did not achieve primary education in this country. A United Workers Party government did. And what you have to do is to congratulate those who went before you. And that's what I'm doing. I do not play the politics where we try to beat up on each other. We have a small country to run. So I'm saying, we have to stop this witch hunting about finding fault with things that we know there will be problems with. All of us are responsible. Our young people are looking to us. They are looking to us. When we cry about where this country is going, it's no wonder our young people, they don't see a difference in what we take to this house. We have to be truthful. We have to say there will be problems. But we have to tell them that those who come after us will help to make what we've left behind better. Universal education was not hastily achieved. There were going to be problems. But my contention is, and I'm asking the Minister for Education, to present to this House a report of the task force step to give us the conclusions of what they found in their deliberations after they've looked at how universal secondary education was achieved. There's no big thing to this. Because I'm almost certain that the life of that task force has come to an end. Why don't we have a report? And all this talk about consultation and collaboration. I'm an educator by profession. I was never invited to any consultation. What was the consultation? I have spoken to a number of educators in this country. Why weren't they asked to make contributions? Where are we going? We're politicizing our education system. Where are we going? Why aren't the members on the opposite side invited to look at education as a holistic thing? I don't know all the answers to educational issues. The Minister of Education does not. Nobody in this country has all the answers. But I keep hearing the rhetoric of consultation, but I do not see that consultation. The opposition, not for once, was involved in the whole discussion on how you look at USC. There are schools in my constituency. I'm an educator by profession. I expected to have at least a call to say, what do you think? Because, as I said, this is not a political issue in a sense, partisan politics. It is an issue about development. How can we make our education system better? I mean, nobody would have called the former Minister of Education. It was about 10 years sitting there, going to all sorts of consultations with former PS of Education. What did you all see? What were the discussions with the World Bank during your time? We try to play as if we are God when we become elected into government. We have to stop this. I don't want to hear this thing about what goes wrong. We told the people of St. Lucia we want to change. We want to change how our business was done in this country. I was not in the last House of Assembly. I don't care about these issues that you are raising now. I want to hear what is it that we are determined to do about our education system. So it's the same mongering in there. You know, we will not change. Madam Speaker, we will not change. Because the members on the opposite side can hear them. What comes around goes around. Well, I thought I was addressing an issue about saying where we need to go as a team. We keep saying we are a small country, there are very few resources that we have. How can we tap into all the minds that we have? And all 17 persons here up to sit together and discuss issues of development for this country. You don't have to involve in everything that you do, but there must be some consultation. I don't have to hear things from this house only when I enter this house. There should be issues that I understand from having been elected as the member for Castro South. The task force should tell us what the recommendations are. Because I am as I speak, and I do not say untruth because I do my homework to make sure I check with it. School supervision, the unit in the Ministry of Education that is responsible for school supervision. If there were any recommendations, this is the first group of persons who should know about it in this country. Because they are the ones who are going to make the difference between the teachers who implement the curriculum and what the government's vision is for education. He must have a holistic idea of how education should be run. The Minister of Education is a fellow principal. He has a clear idea, I assume, of how education runs in this country. But when you have technical people who do not know, when I call them, because that's the division I have to call, where is the information? What are the recommendations from the task force? How are we going to strengthen our schools? Speaker, out of that same USC, I have done my own. Obviously, USC would have had problems. And I recognize that because for years I've been knocking even the common entrance. I noticed that their children were getting zero for chewing these exams. It means that we had to put some structural, we had to put some structural changes in the primary school. Not the government running, rushing to outdo a Labour government by saying you're going to bring a university in 3 years. What we have to do is go back and look at the primary education system. Because if you're going to strengthen your secondary education level, you need to look at the primary education level. Because the zero, that the students get, it means that there's a problem. And one of the issues could just be class size in the reception years. Maybe you need to reduce class size in the reception years. I don't want to say this is what I want to say, recommendations. Class size is an issue we need to talk about, because the teachers in the kindergarten class, they have a very tough time trying to implement the curriculum. And that's why some students are left behind. All of us who have been teachers know the reality of a teacher having 40 students, 30 students, and especially in a kindergarten class, some students, unfortunately, will be left behind because certain measures are not in place for them. But no, we skip politicizing our education system. We do not use persons who are not sharing the same philosophy with us. Yet we say we are all going towards the same development plan for education in this country. And I again reiterate, universal secondary education would always have issues to be dealt with. What this government had to do was say, let us sit together as a team and look to see what we can do. Madam Speaker, Cohen, some researchers, they found that they made a statement that they said developing countries would be the ones in a better position to implement universal secondary education by the year 2015. Now, civilization should be proud of itself that a small developing country was able to achieve that by the year 2006. We should not play politics with that. We have to tell ourselves that's what we could do, and we have done it for our people. The task force was also given a second objective. We're supposed to look at the SALCC, the Sir Sir Lewis Community College. I think we have heard of a lot of discussion. Again, there seem to be all the talk again of consultation, discussion with stakeholders, and I'm wondering if I'm not a stakeholder. I wonder if other people who share the same philosophies with me who are not called to discussion, whether they are stakeholders in this country. The opposition has never been invited to any discussion on making Sir Arthur Lewis our university. All the talents that exist in this country, we have to harness that talent. Sir Arthur Lewis, for the last 2 years, I left Sir Arthur Lewis in 2006 as a lecturer of mathematics. Sir Arthur Lewis, for the last 2 years, I've been looking for a principal. With all respect to the principal who sits there now, I'm not saying he's not qualified, but they've been looking for a principal for the past 2 years, and they cannot find a local in this country who would apply and qualify for that position, and yet we are busy pushing things that we have not even understood all the issues. Anybody can get up, the Minister of Education can get up any morning and just write a charter for a university if he wants. But writing a charter for a university will not make the university what he wants it to be. There are a lot of options that we have for SAFA. We should have been asking all stakeholders, look, let us discuss this issue as a country. Do we want to make SAFA a university, first of all? Do we want to make SAFA a university college? Maybe you have the University of the West Indies, maybe you have university some other place. Do we want to make sure that Sir Arthur becomes the community college it's supposed to be, whereby it reaches its potential of giving out associate degrees? But no, this government just feels that it gets into power to undo a Labour government that achieved something that is not a privilege but a right for all citizens. This government wants to show we're not going to have our big plans too. We're going to have something that we can beat our chest. Making a university is not, it is not just saying you have a university. It's the quality of the institution. Obviously, as anybody who's been involved in education, we need, and that's what the last government did. The last government, I am a product of the fact that the last government tried its best to have more persons to achieve at the PhD level, because they recognize to have a university or to have a tertiary institution, you need to have more persons with certain qualifications. What we have to do is to continue in that vein. But we can't just jump one morning and say we're going to mix up a university. I'm not against the concept, but I'm saying we should have, we should develop a consensus on the way forward. My children, your children are going to inherit that university. And we'll be proud of it when it comes. But we have to do it the right way. Consensus building. That's how you build a country. I don't want to hit on University of Guyana or University of Belize. But there's sometimes people come with degrees from some of these places and people are worried about the quality of these degrees. Because you have to first ask, is that the level you want? We must not let SAFA get this. SAFA is a quality institution. We have to build it. There are arrangements that we can have for SAFA. The 2+2 arrangement is a good one for SAFA, Mr. Minister of Education, where you work towards getting SAFA to link up with other places, because SAFA can introduce the associate degree and have a 2+2 relationship with, well, tell the nation, have a 2+2 relationship where you say, for example, Monroe College is here today, we're going to try to meet with you and we are going to say, look, we can bring our students up to that level. I'm going to answer that. Madam Speaker.
Order.
Madam Speaker, I'm not marketing Monroe, I want to be sure about that. Because some of the members, they need me to teach them at Monroe College.
That's right.
I don't make fun of that. I've been a teacher all my life. You are free to come to me, I will teach you. Somebody say, knowledge engineer. But Monroe is not the only one, Mr. Minister. There are other linkages we can have. At least they come here. It's going to be cheaper. Sir Alva cost us. Sir Alva cost us as a country. Anything in the vicinity of 18 million, if you had to properly finance Sir Alva, and the minister will agree with that, if you had to properly finance Sir Alva, it will cost anything in the vicinity of $18 million per year. Most times we're giving them about $13.5, $14 million. But when you bring other institutions that have already developed their name, that's what we have to do. They've already developed their name. It does not cost the government of St. Lucia to have a Monroe College here, Mr. Minister of Social Transformation. Good person. I'm not promoting what's foreign. University of the West Indies must be tapped also. You see, the issue that we seem to do is we, and the minister came in was foreign, the minister never went to the University of the West Indies. So I am very disturbed that the minister be came at this point. So minister, are you disturbing me?
Member, would you kindly focus on your presentation? I will keep an eye on the minister.
Well, Madam Speaker, I want you to do that with due diligence. See, the discussion is always about us and them. I bring up a few issues on marketing. I think what we have to do as a country is look for all the various possibilities, all the modalities that we can use to bring SAFA to what we want as a country. It is our very own. I'm a proud product of SAFA. When I was a student, I lectured at SAFA. I understand that SAFA needs to be held as our very own. But it's going to cost us sometimes. It's going to be a lot cheaper for us as a country to find all the various ways that we can boost SAFA if we cannot reach a university of St. I'm not saying we're not going to, but if we cannot reach that level just yet, how we can link with a St. Lawrence College in Canada, how we can link with a school in the United States, and find maybe franchising of degrees. There might be a degree, let's say, in criminal justice that you can get from another school that you tell SAFA, look, Your students with associate degrees will work out of them. This is the issue. That's why the Ministry of Education needs very, very dedicated new minds to lead this country. That's what the Ministry of Education needs. The young people are looking forward to the day when we can take people who understand the issues to lead them. And Madam Speaker, I'm very disturbed that I sit here as a, I sit in this country as a taxpayer, and I'm not asked to make any contribution to the discussion going on with SAFA. I hear a lot of consultations, and I have never seen any, in fact, I have never seen any figures given to us as to how much it costs us for this consultation. I am assuming that it's for free. But I know that we have quality personnel in this country who can take SAFA to where it ought to be. Madam Speaker, I think we should put this issue to rest about universal secondary education. I think this government needs to move on. You have inherited the government. You have inherited the system. What you have to do is better the system for our children. Madam Speaker, this government told us a lot of issues about transportation subsidies that will be given in the last budget. I am aware that the government itself is aware that this is a huge undertaking. And they have got to be honest and say it's a huge undertaking. Because to put in a transportation subsidy entails working with a number of different persons. Teachers, schools, parliamentary representatives, all those who can bring together. I mean, it's a very good thing for you to help your children. But this government has done certain things that are wrong in terms of how the transportation subsidy has been allocated. There are children in my, I'm not even going to say constituency, in my village, if you want to call Cicero village. The bus comes for them, for the children right there in Cicero. They are going to various schools. The buses have space, and yet these children can't get on these buses. Because the way it was done has not been done properly. It is because yes, it is politicized. Children asking me, why is that bus going to Marigo? It is true. Why is that bus going to Marigo? And I am going to Marigo and it's empty and I can't get on. Because it has not been done properly, Mr. Minister. Madam Speaker, we need to address these things in our country. Because the late Prime Minister had a plan for what you wanted in terms of that transportation subsidy, but we have politicized it. There is much wastage in that regard. I'm almost certain each of these parliamentary representatives could have been here making a say towards how they should reallocate in their own constituencies towards that transportation subsidy. I have children right under that first tunnel on the main highway who have to wait by that roadside for hours because there are no buses that ply that route. Of course, buses ply the route, but it's not from the area. And it would have been a good thing for the ministry to do some research on which areas can be handled. I am not saying, I'm not criticizing the government that they could have given everybody, but they made the people of Senator believe that they could have done everything at once. You cannot tell the people lies. They're going to see right through his lies. We have to be honest with ourselves and the country that we don't have a lot of resources, but we have to tell the people the truth. Teacher training is an issue. This government ran around the country telling people that the Labour government were the ones who were preventing teachers at Teachers College from getting a salary. My dear friend, the Minister of Social Transformation, we have Teachers College together. He knows there are 3 types of people at Teachers College. Even the minister knows that, Madam Speaker. That you can enter Teachers College in 3 different ways. You go there, having come out from a school where there was a place for you because the school had a vacancy. So once you apply to Teachers College, your principal recommended you, and therefore it's automatic that the Ministry of Education gave you a salary because you're a member of staff of that school. Because you have a responsibility to go back to that school after your training. I went for it. Young people may think 20 years ago the minister says that he knows. Most of all of us there were teachers when we know that. The second when you go to teacher's college, you already have a school teaching. The school does not have a vacancy, but you choose to go to teacher's college. Your principal does not recommend you. You go to teacher's college, you do not get a salary. Because the government of St. Lucia cannot bear that burden for everybody. And the third way you go to teacher's college is that you come in as a private candidate. You've never taught, and therefore, why is the government supposed to give you a salary? You've not taught. And this government sits there and they tell the people this lie.
Honourable member, it is in breach of the standing orders to impute improper motives to honourable members.
Madam Speaker,
you would need, I'm still speaking, honourable member, you would need to be guided as to your use of language.
Madam Speaker, you're questioning my knowledge of the education system, and you're saying to me,
indicated to you that it is in breach of the standing orders to impute improper motives.
Madam Speaker.
And the use of the word lie would be tasked as that. That is what I'm drawing to your attention.
Madam Speaker, what I should say is, those who know better are not telling people the truth. I don't know if there's any difference between this and what I've said before. And Speaker, we can lose all flowery language as we want. When you see the absence of truth, a lie is not a speaker.
I have given you guidance, so it would be advisable for you to take it. The standing orders speak very clearly to this point, and in order to keep up to the standard of debate in this House, you would have to abide to the standing orders if you wish to continue your presentation. I repeat again, it is in breach of the standing orders to impute improper motives. And to say that members have told lies or are not telling the truth is imputing improper motives.
Okay, we'll move on. Thank you. What I would suggest to this government is this, with regards to teacher training and teachers generally. Our teachers do a very good job in the school system. I hear people come here and tell you that our education system is flawed. Yeah, there are always going to be problems in our education system. But what this government must do is, there are problems with teachers who have been teaching from September to July, which is the academic year. This government should try its best to ensure that all teachers who taught in September and July in the academic year are given salaries in August. These teachers, they have mortgages. They have commitments like everybody else. So if we want to put money into teaching, we have to do it with teacher training, yes, but we also have to do it by, we can change. Again, this government keeps saying to me, we didn't start it. Again, I say, we can change what we want to change. Stop showing you're so ineffective when you're in government. It is your responsibility to change what can be changed. The teachers who are teaching from September to July, where do you expect them to get sustenance between August? They've got commitments too. At one point I understand, yes, clearly, it's a policy. I understand that they were given their salaries back in August, but it has stopped. I am not apportioning blame. I am simply suggesting that we forward Mr. Minister of Education. It's about time where we take criticism the way it's supposed to be taken. Our teachers are doing a good job, and when the summer month comes and those who are not appointed, where are they getting the money to keep themselves? This is where a punishable government would have gone for teachers in this country. I am giving you the information. Madam Speaker, I want to move a little away from education to talk a little about health care.
Before you do so, I wish to remind honourable members that it is also in breach to interrupt a member who is speaking. So please be aware of that particular standing order and allow the member to uninterruptedly make his presentation. Continue, honourable member.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, health and education are very critical to our people. And there are sets of plans in health and education that when we come to health and education and we see plans that are looking decent, as anybody who inherits government, we need to look at these plans and see how best we can push these plans for the benefit of our people. This government inherited projects from the last government, and without consultation or without any sort of really focus on the issues, just change plans accordingly. In fact, it looks like some ministers of government would just go on radio and decide for themselves without the cabinet that they can tell us what the development plan of this country should be. I think I speak about the psychiatric hospital. This hospital was 90% complete when this government came into power. Psychiatric hospitals and facilities are not for only the persons that we call mentally ill people. All of us can make use of the psychiatric facility, because the mental health of our people is important. But this government came into power suggesting, we heard it, that the Taiwanese government would have completed this project. Today, some 16 months later, nothing has been added to the psychiatric hospital. In fact, some of the windows are hanging out now. I pass this place every day. It's in my constituency. It's a shame on what we do in this country. We have to build on the works of others. If you bring in a new government, it's your prerogative to do that. You did, I accept it. But get them to finish projects that they said they will help you finish. And I think it is wrong, because we had a plan for healthcare in this country, and this government has derailed that plan. And I think, I'm sure you've gone throughout the supermarket areas in particular, and people push all sorts of papers in your face about the child in healthcare. That's because these are our people, you know, our people. If... Madam Speaker.
Order.
I think we need to do a little more visitation to the supermarket. Because I was at the supermarket just yesterday and people were pushing my face. Our people need help in healthcare. This government doesn't realize that the health of the people are important. The government talks about not having money to finish hospitals, and the government wants to put money into tunnels and to other massive projects. Again, I repeat, who is going to inherit this project if the health of the people is not taken care of? As I said, the psychiatric hospital was 90% complete when this government came to power. The least you had to do, was to complete that project. In fact, the Minister of Finance was then Minister of Health, and he commended. He gave it glowing remarks. And I respect him, because I know he was a Minister of Health. He understood the vision of the then government for healthcare in this country. But no, some ministers change it around. There's a lack of action by this government on projects that they inherited. If the government of this country feels that they're not going to get any credit for a good project, they abandon the project. This is not what you develop. We boast of the United States, we keep watching them, and we don't see successive governments come and change things just because they were not the ones who implemented. And I have come into this house to change things. And I don't want people to keep telling me they did it before. I think that's a lame excuse. When we campaigned in 2006, I heard that we were going to change things. All of us said so. And the people hold us to that. Let us change things in this country. We have a government who allows a foreign government to dictate its policies. When you can tell me a government minister could go on radio and tell us he had an expert from foreign government to tell him how to go about developing our own psychiatric hospital. A hospital has been planned, you know, by a government before. And then other people come in from outside and tell us it's too big for you. Myopic thinking. Because the minister may be the very one who is going to need the psychiatric hospital in the next few years. Mr. Minister, I warn you, you will not want to face the golden hoop. And I cast no aspersions there because, Madam Speaker, health is a very fragile thing. All of us are susceptible to all the same sicknesses. I'm no human, superhuman. So I warn the government that what you will not want for yourself. It is the government that should have been showing some compassion for the people of this country because you cannot continue in what is called the golden hope. For years we've had the golden hope. I'm not blaming anybody. We probably didn't have a plan at the time. But when a government has put in place a new psychiatric hospital, we ought to have done something about it. Let's not play cheap politics with saying we've destroyed the work of one government. It's our people. The future is ours and our children's children. Madam Speaker, this government has no conscience, no social conscience. But I'm sure you hear more about UHC, Madam Speaker, by other members. I want to go to Home Affairs and National Security. Madam Speaker, I want to make it clear here that I have stood here before and I have made pronouncements on many, in very different media, that I do not believe that crime should be politicized. But this government came into power inheriting certain things that were put in place by the then Labour government, and certain situations began to get better in this country, and the government is trying to claim. We have to work together that they are the ones who are solving the crime. You're not the ones doing the crime. How could you be solving? We have to work together. I have a consultation, again, I go back to this, that this government has not consulted the opposition for once in the year and 4 months that's in power about what are we as a country going to do about the situation of crime in this country. Crime is not a problem that affects UWPs only or SLPs. That's not the issue. It is affecting all of us. It's about time that we recognize that this party thing about crime, it was under a Labour government. This issue, we have to stop it. There are still three murders in this country, my man. Why are we supposed to make crime as if it's a political issue? It's politics, but not partisan politics. So we have to stop it. We have to get to the point where the young people see that we are serious. That this house will get together, the Prime Minister will call a session and say, today we're discussing how we go forward in resolving the crime issues in this country. Madam Speaker, there will be nothing for my children to inherit if we don't come together as a country to tackle some of the social problems that we face. The Labour government in office brought some police officers from Britain to help with situation in this country. This government wants to boast, beat on its chest that it's doing. Let me just reiterate the Labour Party's position. In the first place, they were not brought here to take over the police force. They were brought here to complement those officers in certain positions in the police force. And therefore, I commend the government for continuing the work of the Labour Party. I commend them in this budget for putting $1.3 million to the refurbishment of certain police stations. That's commendable. But I think you can go further. Labour had already planned to build a new headquarters for the police. They had also planned to build a headquarters for the fire department. So I want the government to build on the work that was started. That is not when we in opposition start talking about, the Labour Party built new police stations, that was a bad thing. The Labour Party built police stations because there was a need to boost up the morale of the people who serve us in this country. You can't work effectively if you work in a dump. So we have to stop this. So I commend the government for putting $1.3 million to the continuation of the program started by the Labour Party government.
So remember, you have 10 more minutes in which to complete your presentation. Honourable Member for Class 3D.
Yeah, I wish to invoke Section
62.10 of the Senate orders to allow the Honorable Member from Castries South an additional 15 minutes.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 7210 be invoked to allow the member for Castries South an additional 15 minutes within which to complete his presentation. I now put the question, as many as all our opinions say aye, as many as will be contrary opinions say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. He is granted.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker. I need to say that only youth and sports think this government must not look at the youth as a problem to be solved, but as a resource to be harnessed. This is youth man. And I did not really see from the Prime Minister's budget what is really specified. I'm not saying he did not put anything, but to specify a lot more for the youth of this country. These are the people we keep saying they are the future. We have to do it, Madam Speaker. We must not pay them token. Just pay them, say, oh, the youth of this country, they are the future of tomorrow. We must respect our young people. I am saying this because, Madam Speaker, youth and sports, right there in Castries South, we have what I will call pieces of ground that we call playing fields, that to this very day, no ministry of sports can take care of these grounds by cutting the grass when it's needed. This comes from personal contributions. What are we telling the people of Castries South, in particular, let's say in Banan, in Marigo, that the government is not responsible for these playing areas, these recreational facilities that they have at their disposal? We have to show the young people of this country that we are serious as a government. And Speaker, I heard the memo very quickly, I heard the Minister of Finance talk about having public education on CSME and the EPA. I want to just quickly say that before the CSME was implemented or signed onto, there was extensive discussion in this country about the advantages and disadvantages of CSME. I was a teacher then at St. Mary's College, so I know. There was extensive discussion. Schools were discussing about what were the implications, because that's how you go with things. But with the EPA, we did not discuss with our people the implications of the EPA before we signed on. We now are going to talk to them about what the EPA means to them. I think it is very late in the day for us to be discussing this issue. But in any case, that's when the government wanted to be discussed. That's when the people are going to discuss it, because I do not remember in this country that we had any serious discussion on the EPA situation as it is. There should have been discussion. I repeat, there's low implementation in the last budget. From what last budget, this government cannot come to this house and tell us how many projects, tell us how many projects they achieved from what they told us they were going to do in the last budget. The abattoir should have been completed by now. I expected the farmers to be using that facility now. It was made a lot of noise about it. Now I wanted to hear about it happening last fiscal year. It should have happened. Don't tell me it will happen. We budgeted last year. It should have happened. This government was caught trying to find its foot with its own created problems.
Order.
Madam Speaker, there is a glaring failure of the government to implement things that they've put in the budget. We must come to this house to discuss the budget, what is put in front of us. Madam Speaker, I hope the members on the other side realize there is a lot of talk about a commission of inquiry. And I hope, because there is a lot of talk about it, that the Minister of Finance has already said that there is going to be a commission of inquiry, that this whole talk about corruption and cost overrun that is stopping this house, because it's already been said that there is going to be a commission of inquiry. And I want the government to do the right thing, to call members on both sides of the house to sit on that commission. And I want to be a commissioner on this. The because this is what, when we want transparency and accountability, we have to have, let's do what we like most Americans, they do things well. Let's show that we have joint sessions that we are looking at it. Let's not pay somebody else to get it. Let us talk among ourselves. Let us be honest with ourselves. So I want, Madam Speaker, that all talks of cost overrun to be to cease, because the government has already said it's going to look at the whole idea of a commission of inquiry. Because the government started talking about corruption, pointing names, trying to put the reputation of persons. Now the government begins to talk about maladministration, a different language. We must be very careful. Madam Speaker, if you have something to show that somebody was involved in corruption, show it or else shut up. Because this government finds itself on the back foot. It has nothing to show because it has not found any shred of evidence of corruption in the Labour Party government. So now it's telling us at all times there will be. It's about time this government showed the people of St. Lucia that they put a committee to the commission together. I'm sure the former Prime Minister said there's nothing to hide. And I want to be a commissioner there also. As I said, I repeat, without, I expect to be a commissioner.
Order.
My friends on the other side, I warn you, please, remember, I want to be a commissioner there. As we go, I just want to list a number of promises this government made. I can't see the promises been fulfilled or been kept. They have reneged on their promises. Government promised to reduce the cost of living. And again, the external factors were always there. It's one thing to say what you want in opposition, make a lot of noise. We have to be honest with ourselves. I'm not saying that now you will find out. I'm as true to a poll as the needle is. The government says it will create 7,000 new jobs, meaning it will have created 1,400 jobs each year of the 5-year term. I don't think one has created. If one has been created, it has cost the people of this country $1.2 million in 3 years. Unemployment rose from 13.5% last year. Now it stands at 14.6%. Unemployment has grown by 1.1% under this government. The same government that says that created new jobs in this country. Where are the new jobs for the people of this country? More people are at home than ever before. The government, through its prime minister, is talking about they will relook at the STEP program. But you have to relook at the program before you shut it down. Because the poor people of this country are still crying. There are people in this country who cannot. We cannot really re-educate them. There are people you cannot re-educate, you can't retool. Let us be honest with ourselves that what was going to keep them and their families was some of the jobs that we gave them to cut grass or to do other things. We must fool ourselves. My grandmother does not necessarily want to be redoing educational programs at her 86-year-old age. But whatever she can do to sustain herself, she will do. This government doesn't have a conscience. The government told the people of St. Lucia is going to reduce the recurrent expenditure by $300 million. I don't see any signs of this after 16 months. 16 months. Madam Speaker, these are interesting times. These are challenging times for our country. These are times for us to play with the future of our people of this country. It's not time for people to just get up in the morning and tell us what plans they have, use government money to do as they please, and not able to account for it. The elected members in this house have to say something about these selected members who do as they please with the government. Where are we taking this country? People who don't have to account to the electorate are doing as they please in this country, and we sit here and allow them to. Madam Speaker, the young people who are yet unborn will speak to these men. I hear a lot about a consultation, I keep saying. Hurricane Jean came and it went. I took my time and I saw a number of ministers out. I took my time, I went to my constituency from morning till dusk. Not once this government consulted any of us over here about damages to property, households in our constituency to say, how can we look at issues that affect our people? This government is not a government for UWP, so it's a government for all St. Lucians. Not for once did you call, anybody called, and I put it on record. I called you, Mr. Minister of Communication and Works.
Honourable Member, Honourable Member, I am addressing you, and you will sit and listen in silence. You will continue to address the chair. You do not respond to Honourable Members directly, despite what they say. You continue to focus on your presentation, and you will address the chair at all times. Please proceed.
Madam Speaker, I just want to be clear that I stand by my point that this country was affected by Hurricane Dean. There was no consultation, no discussion. Madam Speaker, I called the Minister of Works. He gave me suggestions, and I appreciate that. But he must not try to make me believe that he was the one who called me. I called him to ask for certain suggestions. And that's the point I'm making. I think we have to be honest.
Madam Speaker, on a point of order, I think the honourable member should stop being dishonest. It's not about who calls who, but on every occasion when he calls, he was taken care of, and he knows that, Madam Speaker.
There is one point of order that has been made. I will deal with that before I hear any other points of order. Honourable Prime Minister, I think it is improper to impute that the member is being dishonest. And I do not think his words amount to dishonesty based on what he said. So I will not approve that point of order. Continue on, Member.
Madam Speaker, I appreciate that. But there is a difference between government reaching out to those in opposition, and I never said the government has not a system. I said the government does not consult. I have called on many occasions, I must say, the government has responded. I have never imputed that. But I did say that I was given suggestions, Madam Speaker. But the point I'm making is there's no consultation if you don't call this government. Madam Speaker, I still stand by my words here that we apportion blame in this country. We try to twist the words, but there are honourable members on the other side know that if it's an argument, Madam Speaker, of rhetoric, they would have lost anyhow with me. We don't change the words. Madam Speaker, just to say that in the last few minutes, I implore this government, and I'm going to say it is more than 18 months since work began in my constituency, especially in Cicero, some ring roads down for the people of Cicero. 20 years these people suffered. 20 years. Again, I don't portion any blame. I'm simply asking for my people that these roads, the Labour government started fixing these roads. The Labour government started fixing these roads. And I think it's about time these roads are completed. So I call upon the government to complete the works in that constituency. And yes, I represent the member for Mikus North, and I want her road fixed too. I want her road fixed. She's my constituent. I want her road fixed. And I call on the minister, as the Prime Minister said, all the citizens, money is allocated that these roads will be fixed and they'll be finished this year. So it cannot take 18 months to complete a job that was started so long ago. Africa, there are a lot of things that the people of Marigo are still looking, waiting to hear what is the situation with them as it relates to the lands in Marigo. I'm asked to represent these people in this house, and I do so, saying that I think we need, if we are creating housing for all solutions, that we do not destroy some communities in the process. Marigo must not be destroyed. The people of Marigo must be allowed to continue to reside in Marigo on land that they have lived on for years. The government must find a way of addressing this in a more amicable manner.
Honourable Member, you now have 10 more minutes within which to complete your presentation.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I speak on behalf of all my constituents. For years, members have represented Cashew South and have forgotten about Kubaril, as if Kubaril, because these persons are supposedly, supposedly I say that, we say they are in the upper strata of society, but they have needs too. Their roads need fixing. Kubaril, their roads need fixing. And they belong to me, and I want to say that I expect the government to move swiftly, because I did say that the former Prime Minister did give these people assurances when the Million Highway was built, that these roads would be fixed after the Million Highway. Some of these roads are in a deplorable condition, and I again want to implore this government to move quickly to assist these people with their roads. They tried on their own in Kubaril, but they can't always do it by themselves because they are taxpayers also. Madam Speaker, I want this government to know that when the members will stand, we have to address the budget. Again, I want to say that this budget is full of promises. It's heavy and massive spending, big projects, but the social needs of the people are not addressed immediately. This government must do the right thing. This government must exhibit a social conscience. The people of this country elected you to govern, and they expect you to deliver on those issues that affect them in the immediate. Anything else will not be acceptable by the people of this country. And I want us in this house to begin to take our responsibility seriously, that we address the budget as it is given. It's a debate about the budget, not about apportioning blame to persons before. We have to address, say when it is good, but I do. But I also say, I criticize not to destroy people, but criticize to say, here is the way we can go forward. It's about time that we learn to be truthful, because our young people are looking at us, how we comport ourselves in this house, and how we manage the affairs of this country. I want to thank the Ministry of Social Transformation for ensuring that the people of Huasho can get the community center refurbished. Because what you've done is you follow through. Well, they can care, but you follow through with the plans of the Labour Party government. That's how I want the government to run. That you find, but that's the point. You build on what is left there. Because that project was already there long before the government. But I commend the government for seeing the project through. This is what I want to see, that we commend people when they do what's right. And I look forward to a lot of projects that should be done in Castro South. I employed a Minister of Communications who's also the parliamentary representative for Castro South, that we share on communities. And I think it would be good for him to consider the people of La Croix, the little kiosk up in the Lapua area, on this side of the constituency. I see them selling, and when the weather is not good, they have to feel the elements. I hope you consider building them a kiosk where they can sell their wares without being affected by the weather. We can share everything, that's what humanity is about. But I want to plead on behalf of the people of Castro South that there are projects that need to be implemented, and this government needs to implement projects at a higher rate than they implemented in the last fiscal year. Thank you, Madam Chairman.